Well, you may remember where you were 20 years ago today when the Provisional IRA declared a ceasefire, a move that was greeted with relief and indeed scenes of joy in Northern Ireland and internationally. It was the beginning of the end of 25 years of violence, which had resulted in the deaths of over 3,000 people. Today, concern isn't so much for the scale of violence, although threats do remain, but over the cold war between the two main parties in the power-sharing arrangement. The North's Deputy First Minister, Martin McGuinness, joins us now from Derry. Martin McGuinness, thanks for joining us this afternoon.
Thank you for having me.
In your speech earlier today, we'll get to some of the logistics of the ceasefire just in a moment, but you were calling for the US to reassert its influence. It suggests that you've lost faith in both governments and indeed for your partners in the power-sharing arrangement to make any progress. Can you just say why the US, first of all, is being called in here, or why you're looking for them to come in?
Well, I think from the Bill Clinton era right through the Bush administration and the Obama administration, the United States have played a very important role in our peace process. They were there from the very beginning, and they've been highly influential at critical stages of the process, not least during the discussions around transfer of power and policing and justice, where George Bush, surprisingly, played a very influential role in helping to make that happen. So this week we had Senator Gary Hart, who is a representative of Secretary of State John Kerry, and I think that highlights the concern that there is in the administration that things are not progressing as well as they, and indeed I, would like to see them progress.
What did you make of the comments of Nancy Soderberg, Bill Clinton's go-to person on Northern Ireland, who said it's time to grow up and stop concentrating on the past, it's time to look to the future and get over the current difficulties?
Well, I think it's always a danger whenever commentators speak about the North that they adopt an approach which is about all the parties are to blame, which ignores the fact that Sinn Féin endorsed Richard Haass and Megan O'Sullivan's proposals in relation to how we deal with the past, parades, flags, symbols and emblems. But the general thrust of what she had to say, I think, is very, very important, because I think that the big difficulty is that we have not resolved those issues. The unionists have decided to opt out of an inclusive negotiating process. They've decided to throw in their lot with loyalist paramilitaries, with the Orange Order and others who have played a very negative role over the course of the last 2 years. And of course, all of this has its roots in what has been, I think, an abysmal failure by unionist leaders to accept a democratic decision taken by Belfast City Council in relation to the fly-in of the union flag. I've had to accept all sorts of democratic decisions throughout the course of the last 20 years, and I've done so. I mightn't have liked some of them, but I've done that, and I haven't called people onto the streets. So really, I think what we need to do is get back to a scenario where all of the political parties, including ourselves, are in the room together with the support of the United States administration, the British government and the Irish government. And I think I have to say the governments have taken their foot off the pedal and have become dangerously complacent over the course of the last 2 years.
Isn't not getting on and a feeling that there's the space to not get on ultimately a sign of progress? It's what normal political parties do. They fight with each other.
No, absolutely. And the cut and thrust of being in government, that certainly is a scenario. But I think that given the challenges that we face, and they're not just in the issue of the flag, symbols and emblems or parades or the past. It's around the reality that we're dealing with a British government in London that's very intent on imposing very cruel and swinging cuts on some of the most marginalised, disadvantaged and disabled within our society. And of course, there's a lot of concern in England about the increase in food banks, the privatisation of adjudicating on people who are entitled to disability benefit, and a plethora of other negatives which are targeted at the poor, coupled with...
Is it true you were close to reaching a deal on that yourself, that you'd made some suggestions yourself on how to... make some progress on this that ultimately Sinn Féin's leadership didn't want to progress with?
That's a story that has been circulating and put about by our political opponents over the course of the
last... Well, that's why I'm asking you if it's true.
Well, it's totally untrue. There is absolutely no basis in truth whatsoever in that assertion.
So you had no proposals for compromise?
No, we did engage in a process along with the DUP of exploring how we could mitigate what was coming at us in terms of what the British government were attempting to do. But listen, let's get into perspective what the British government were intent on doing. They were intending on drawing something like £500 million, half a billion pounds, out of our economy each year as a result of the swinging cuts which would be targeted at the most marginalised, disadvantaged and disabled within our society. And then, on top of that, even after we had that discussion with the DUP, we had the Chancellor of the Exchequer come out and make a statement saying he was going to impose £12 billion more cuts. And then in the last couple of weeks, we have a leaked story from the British government effectively saying that they intend to cut child benefit for families that have more than four children. So I'm very conscious of what is coming down the tracks at us, and I'm very conscious that this is austerity measures which are targeted at the poorest within our society. And I think we as political leaders have a responsibility to stand up, and I hope the DUP and others will stand with us.
Presumably they're not the aspects of disagreement you're expecting the US to get involved in.
No, I think the US, through the support that they gave to Richard Haass and Megan O'Sullivan, are very focused on the whole issue of how we deal with parades, how we deal with the past, and how we deal with flag symbols and emblems. And I hear unionist leaders trying to put the argument that Haass is off the table. And that's against the backdrop of Mike Nesbitt, the leader of the Ulster Unionist Party, in the run-in to the finality of the Haass proposals, saying that we were 90% there.
Well, what's Gary Hart's feeling on the Haass proposals? Is he here to represent the Haass proposals, or is he there to see if the Haass proposals can be tweaked in any way to get buy-in from the unionists?
Well, I think it's important to emphasise what Gary Hart said to us. He's not here as an envoy. He was asked by the Secretary of State, John Kerry, to come to speak with all of the parties, speak with the governments, to make an assessment and bring that assessment back to him. And my understanding is that that meeting took place yesterday between Gary Hart and John Kerry. So I think it's no secret that the United States are supportive of the Haass proposals. It's also no secret that we have been given no support by the British government in relation to the Haass proposals. And I think what we need to do is, in a combined way, everybody get their act together in relation to how we can move these three vexed issues forward.
You were calling in your speech there earlier for the dissidents to engage in entering politics and abandoning violence. When the IRA, I suppose, was calling a ceasefire, but ultimately making the longer-term commitment to abandoning violence, it involved prisoner releases, access to high-level talks. Is that the kind of thing you would have to extend the dissidents in order to bring them on board?
Well, I mean, can I say first of all that I think that it's encouraging that in the course of recent times we have had people who were very clear advocates for a continuation of conflict associated with the so-called dissidents, effectively now in their wisdom advising people that that is folly of the worst kind. I think what we do need is to recognise that people who are out there who are opposed to the process are entitled to be opposed to the process, but not through violence or military means. Our door has always been open. My door has been open to anyone in terms of engaging in dialogue and discussion about the way forward.
That suggests that they have to come to you. You're expressing admiration for the likes of Albert Reynolds and Bill Clinton, who ultimately took political risks to bring people in from the cold. So what could you do on that front to try and engage perhaps more proactively with these, with the dissidents?
Well, what can I say? First of all, I don't think Albert Reynolds has been given enough credit for the role that he played, because I think that by insisting at the time that he should engage with the Sinn Féin leadership, breaking down the discrimination against the Northern Nationalist and Republican community by speaking to all of their political representatives, he effectively assisted with others in setting the ball rolling to the highly fortuitous position we find ourselves in today. So, you know, I am one of those who has been very publicly on the record as saying that we in the Sinn Féin leadership, as has Gerry Adams, are prepared to engage in whatever way can be devised to sit down and have a discussion so that we can point out what some of their own supporters are now beginning to point out, that the continuation of conflict in this country is not beneficial to the country, to the people of Ireland. It's against the wishes of the people of Ireland, and it's also against their own interests indeed.
Would you encourage the Irish government to reach out to the dissidents then in that case, given that you are, as you say, expressing admiration for Albert Reynolds for the political risks he took?
I think everybody should be prepared to engage. I mean, last year at the height of the conflict on the streets of Belfast, which loyalist paramilitaries were involved in, I was meeting with the UVF. I actually met with them on three occasions to point out my view that that strategy was totally and absolutely counterproductive to our entire society. So yes, the reality is that we should be speaking to people who believe that violence is the best way forward so that we can make the case to them that it is not going to succeed, that it's futile, and that it's totally and absolutely against the interests of the people that they would claim to represent.
That's the North's Deputy First Minister, Martin McGuinness. Thanks very much for joining us this afternoon.